Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
He wants to be a Laker.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast here on Fansmanship.com. Before we get going on this podcast, I wanted to remind you that you can download our podcast on iTunes, or you can go to Fansmanship.com to listen. That might be where you're listening now. If you download us on iTunes, you might want to rate us, and you might want to rate us highly, because we would appreciate that, and that would be good. I got a chance to talk with a college buddy of mine on the heels of the San Francisco Giants' second World Series win in 3 years. I got a chance to talk to Matt Dale. Matt is from the Bay Area originally. He's in the Bay Area now. He called for rioting in San Francisco, and it happened. He is a big Giants fan and was one of the first real, I guess, native Giants fans and a real Dodger hater at the outset of our college when we were freshmen. That's when we lived together. So anyway, it was one of my first experiences with a real Dodger hater, and so I thought I'd bring him on today. And Matt had some good takes about the Giants and also some good takes about the Warriors, and we talked a little bit about ownership with the Dodgers, how it's changed. We talked about the Dodgers-Giants rivalry. Quick podcast, about 20 minutes. Hope you enjoy it. Fansmanship.com podcast here on Fansmanship.com.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is Monday, the 29th, I think, of October, the day after the Giants won their second World Series in 2 days, and I'm a little bit depressed. So what better person to call than somebody who was one of three people who actually really got me hating the Giants after I started college. And on the phone with us, we have Matt Dale from the Bay Area. Matt, what's going on?
Oh, how are you? Thank you for having me. I want to correct you. The second World Series title in 3 years, not 2 days.
Did I say 2 days?
No. Second world title last 3 years. Again, they won the first one in 2010. Of course, Cardinals the last year, and then 2012. Of course, you know, you just always saw last night.
Yeah, you know, that's something I always had over Giants fans, was this concept that, you know, they hadn't won a World Series since they got to San Francisco, and no matter what happened, no matter, you know, whether Barry Bonds hit 5 home runs against Chan Ho Park in one inning or whatever happened, I could always kind of hang my hat on that, and these last 3 years have really hurt as far as that goes.
Yeah, well, listen, Owen, I think the Dodgers kind of, at least, you know, from a Southern California perspective, Frank McCourt was probably the worst owner maybe in the history of professional American sports, and I've always had this kind of theory about outcomes on the court. Your team is only going to be as good as your ownership is. And the good news is, I mean, say what you want as to how these, you know, Guggenheim guys and Magic are kind of wildly throwing money around, but at least they care. They're willing to spend now. I don't know.
At least they're spending some money, yeah.
They're spending some money, you know, as opposed to throwing it away on, you know, personal chefs and expensive private flights.
And haircuts. You know, so and haircuts.
Least, and haircuts. That's true. That's true. So, you know, at least things are kind of looking up. I mean, I don't know that they're in a better position to be any better next year than they were this year.
Right.
But I do think that the Giants have a core that they've built. And, you know, I mean, they've certainly gotten lucky with a lot of things. But, you know, I think, I mean, who would you rather start opening day 2013 with? The Giants roster or the Dodgers, you tell me, Owen.
Yeah, well, exactly. So there's two things that I feel like kind of bode well for the Dodgers. One is that while they didn't spend any money for the last 10 years, I think they made up for it all in about a third of a season at the end of the 2012 season. you know, they paying, you know, Adrian Gonzalez, Kyle Crawford, Josh Beckett, you know, re-signing Andre Ethier. You know, they're signing Puig, who's not seen any major league time, but they're paying like $40 million, I think, over 5 years. something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. And they say he squares up the ball like not a lot of people do, but, you know, if he's not benefiting the major league roster ever, who knows? I mean, I guess he could use some outfield flexibility. So that's number one. And number two, as far as the happy things, the way to look at things, I guess, glass half full, the number two thing would be just the fact that the Dodgers were leading the Giants for most of the season. And the Giants came in and got hot and really were never – I mean, I guess they were challenged in the Red Series, but since the Red Series, you know, haven't really been challenged.
They were down 3-1 with the Cardinals.
Okay.
Zito, Barry Zito, who nobody in the Bay Area or San Francisco has expected anything from, that's probably about the first half of the 2007 season, his first year in San Francisco.
Right.
The Giants Nation turned their lonely eyes to Barry to save everything. And he came up ace in game 5, I think it was, in Cincinnati. So,
yeah.
You know, they've definitely, they were definitely in peril this past year.
Tell me, how many years does Zito have left on his contract, do you know?
I think it's two.
2 more years?
I think it's 2, because 2007 was his first year. Oh, no, it's 6 years, like next year's it, actually.
Okay, well, they got to be happy about that. Yeah, and you know, I actually was thinking about Zito, because I wrote an article about how the Yankees should have stuck with A-Rod, and I think it was Granderson, who was also really struggling, who they sat towards the end of their playoff series, and the Giants did just the opposite. The Giants had a guy who was getting overpaid and underperforming traditionally, who I guess had a decent end of the season, but still, they kept him in their postseason rotation. And like you said, he came up aces. You know, if you're going to pay a guy that much money, you got to live or die with that guy. You can't just sit him down, I feel like, at the end. And I think the Yankees have a lot to learn from the Giants actually playing their overpaid, underperforming star.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Giants have kind of dug their grave, though, with how they were using Lincecum very effectively, I might add, out of the bullpen. I don't know if you saw any of the numbers, but I think he pitched something like, I think it was 13 innings of relief with 1 run, 3 hits, and like 18 strikeouts, I think, over the course of the playoffs. So that was another guy who, I mean, Barry was only in the rotation because Timmy had been just so bad this year. But also, more to the point in terms of what the Yankees were doing, I think a lot of that is some Machiavellian kind of positioning in terms of trying to shatter A-Rod's fragile psyche, because he has a full no-trade. And I think that anything that Girardi and Cashman can do to kind of rattle him up a little bit and maybe get him to accept a change of scenery, I think they're willing to accept 5 cents on the dollar just to get him out of town. So... I think they're doing all they can to basically stick it to him. Because you heard Cashman going, oh, yes, we'd certainly listen to offers. You know, I mean, come on, A-Rod's a fragile guy.
But are the Yankees...
You know, they're clearly... Yeah?
Yeah, are the Yankees not a team that could have won the World Series this year, though? I mean, they were in the playoffs. Do you give up? I mean, do you essentially sacrifice your chance of making the playoffs?
DC was hurt. A-Rod's...
Excuse me, according to World Series.
You know...
No,
clearly not. Maybe. I mean, they were totally outgunned and overmatched by the Tigers. I mean, at no point did I ever think, wow, this is a team that's going to win the World Series. And that, you know, and I think all this real bad stuff has kind of come down the hill since it kind of seemed like they were basically out of it. Now, you know, probably they should have stuck with him. They probably should have stuck with Eric Chavez. No, they went with Eric Chavez. I'm sorry. They probably should have stuck with Curtis Granderson because... You know, I can't imagine as a rational thinking opposing manager, you would go, oh, yes, Eric Chavez, that's who we want. We didn't want to face that guy. Please take A-Rod out. But,
yeah, or the backup
I mean,
center fielder, Brett Gardner against Curtis Granderson. Come on.
I agree with you. I've got a very good friend of mine, a Yankees fan from high school that I went to high school with, and he said, this is crazy. You have to start those two guys. I don't care what they've done. You know, you got to kind of ride with them. So that's a common complaint, but... in terms of the Giants, I think, you know, they really didn't have much opportunity but to stick with Zito. So they clearly made the right call, you know. But again, he wasn't that good against Cincinnati. Timmy sort of bailed him out by having that Sterling bullpen, you know, outing in game 4 of the Cincinnati series.
Yeah, I really think it creates this mentality among the whole team of panic when you do that, when you when you sit down a guy who's been playing all year, I mean, the Yankees were like, it was something like 20-10 or something like that. They were about 10 games over 500 their last 30 or 40 games. They were playing really well down the stretch with A-Rod at third, even though A-Rod wasn't playing very well. And then to make a shift mid-playoffs, you know, if you're going to make that change, you needed to do it, I think, before the playoffs started. I mean, you go into the playoffs, and then you'd make that change, and now your team isn't doing what they've always done. Guys are having to play roles that they haven't had to play, and yeah. it really does a number to your team, I think, and the psyche of your team. When you have a guy like Zito, and you say, okay, we're rolling with this guy because we have all year, you know, win, lose, or draw, it creates a mentality, I think, that helps the whole team.
No, you're right, and I think you kind of can further support that with the Melky Cabrera situation out here. You know, they made it very clear from the get, the second that he was suspended, he will not be coming back with his team no matter what the circumstances are, because he was certainly able to come back for the LCS and the World Series.
Right.
Now, they didn't know that back in August when he was initially suspended, but that's what they came out and said, and they stuck to it.
Right.
When, you know, I think a lot of people in the national media, I remember Jonah Carey specifically saying this, like, it was stupid for you to not go with Melky, who is certainly probably going to be a better producer than, you know, Gregor Blanco in left field. You know,
how do you guys win a
was great in the NLCS? So, you know, what do people know? But
how the hell do you guys win a World Series, Matt, with freaking Gregor Blanco and freaking Brandon Crawford and
Marco Scooter, who seemed completely done and then couldn't, nobody could get him out. Great pitching. And
Brandon
Belt. Brandon Belt, sure. Brandon Belt stinks. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Fat Pablo got on at the right time, and they got some pretty clutch hits from Scudero, and the pitcher was lights out.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that stupid, Sergio Romo there, who can throw 88 miles an hour on a good day, is now completely the reincarnation of Dennis Eckersley from 1989. You know, that's crazy, but this team just sort of somehow happens to get these breaks.
That
ball that he had that greened off the inside part of the third base back for a double, the quarter run, that's crazy. I mean, but that's another thing that I think is completely underthought about in terms of sports media narrative, is just how fluky and weird luck is and what an important role it plays in everything. But,
yeah,
you know, you can't really just sort of think of sports as a random number generator to which we assign names and numbers in order to create a narrative, which isn't particularly compelling for anybody, but it kind of sort of boils down to that a lot of times. So.
Yeah, luck and chemistry both, and pitching, and the Giants had, you know, all three of those things, two out of the last 3 years, you know, and that was the difference for them. I was going to ask...
But now I have a question for you, Owen.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you feel like any of the, and I know that it's always been a different thing, I've always felt like Giants fans always really hated the Dodgers.
They did.
Whereas Dodgers fans felt that the Giants were really more of a nuisance than anything. You know, you would have considered rivals to have been, you know, bigger players, more important teams.
Yeah.
But, you know, Giants fans just hated L.A., they hated the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of that animus was chilled out by, number one, the 2010 title, and then the whole Brian Stone thing. But I feel like it's almost reversed where
Are you there still, Matt?
Really hates the Giants. Is that, what do you think? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so you know, I know you know this narrative, and I talked with my childhood friend Miles Davis, who's now part of the hip-hop duo LPMD, and who does a lot of our intro and outro beats. Miles grew up on the same street as me. His family was Giants fans. We were Dodger fans. And, you know, it was kind of like Hatfields and McCoys, Dawson.
Just the fracture point, huh?
Dogs and cats living together. And San Luis Obispo was definitely the, you know, the DMZ for Dodgers versus Giants. And it wasn't until I moved to San Diego and lived with yourself and Andrew and Nolan that I really...
Nolan was cramming his gob full of fucking cheesecake and leaving grease stains around the apartment. That comes to me with the fact that Nolan was a fucking Giants fan, because he could have told you the first thing about that franchise. You know, Vinari, absolutely. Nick Freeman, totally.
Okay.
Nolan, absolutely not.
All right, even if it was between just you and Vinari, then but you guys both hated some Dodgers, and I never hated the Giants that much until I had to kind of hate back. I kind of had to respond.
That's true.
And my first real, you know, satisfying Giants hatred was the 3-home run Kevin Elster opener at Pac Bell Park.
Yeah.
And
what was then Pac Bell, yeah.
Yeah, and that was about the only time the Dodgers upped the Giants in our 4 years of college. Throughout college, you know, Barry Bonds broke the home run record. The Giants made a World Series. And the Dodgers, yeah. I don't know if they were ever 500. They were going through the Darren Dreyfuss years. So to kind of answer your question, you know, the Dodgers fans' vitriol hasn't ever been, I don't think, external. I think it's always been being angry with the team itself, not being angry with other teams or hating other teams. I think the Stowe thing was a gangbanger, you know, random thing that you can find, you know, I think anywhere in LA. You can find it at Raider games. You can find it anywhere in the left field pavilion under the McCourt regime was turning into that. And so it was more of a, I guess, an outcome of McCourt being such a bad owner, I think. And that's where the Dodger fans kind of anger went towards was McCourt. Number one, how can you let this team fall apart like this and not actually ever spend any real money? Number two, now all of us look bad because you couldn't handle, you know, you couldn't put in enough security to handle a few gangbangers who decided that it would be cool to beat a guy within an inch of his life. And you know, real Dodger fans, of course, you know, aren't in that realm. I mean, there's definitely an element of that in any, you know, LA-based team, and including, like I said, you know, the Raiders, who used to be in LA. You know, there's an element of that at Raider Niner games, you know, in the Bay Area. So it's definitely not it's not just LA, but I would say that, you know, really the Dodger fans pointed their anger towards McCourt, and really we feel, you know, I said it when the Dodgers first got bought by the Guggenheim Group. I said, you know, whatever else happens this year, I don't really have a leg to stand on to complain. I'm just happy those guys are out. I'm just happy, you know, the McCourt regime is out. I'm happy Guggenheim's still, you know, in there now. I'm actually still thinking probably that once Coletti leaves, then we'll really be rid of the whole McCourt era.
Isn't it magical who's calling all the shots now?
No, he acts like he is, but he's not. It's
Didn't you see the report that Brian Gumbel's Real Sports on HBO did, where Magic was like walking around the outfield wearing his number 32 Dodgers jersey,
yeah,
when he was the GM of the team? That was fantastic.
Hey,
he's not doing that in real life.
I'm not saying I don't like that. I enjoy that because we need some feel good stuff. What I'm saying is that Coletti's a recycled giant. He's Jeff Kent and Jason Schmidt to me. And so, you know, I think he hasn't done a horrible job, but I think that if you're the Guggenheim Group, you have to look at him and say.
I will bet you throwing, you know, $250 million at a done Carl Crawford, probably getting close to being totally done Josh Beckett. Totally done in fact Josh Beckett. And going to be done in 2 years, Adrian Gonzalez, who's still owed, you know, $85 million. That actually was a bad move.
Yeah,
so,
you know, I don't. I'm not gonna put the.
He's probably 4 years older than he said. So
I'm not gonna put the kibosh or make a judgment on that move quite yet. I'm gonna wait until the end of next year, because I think Beckett with the whole season in the National League, I think puts up like Brad Penny like numbers, where they're consistent. They're never like a number one, but they're always like a two or three.
He's going to have Brad Penny like weight numbers, and that's about it.
That's fine. And I think, and having seen Crawford play a lot in Tampa Bay, I think he's got, if he has any of that left, and I guess we'll see, but that's the point. I think we need to wait and see. And I'm going to give, you know, Gonzalez, Crawford, and Beckett until the end of this upcoming season. I'm going to give kind of this ownership group a year to get their crap together and really figure it out over time here. And if they still look aimless, and if they start looking like the Mets at some point, then then I guess I can go from there. But really, you know, the monster has been anybody but McCourt for two or three, actually like 3 or 4 years for me. I've been banging on the fact that that McCourt needed to be out, and the Brian Stowe thing was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for that, and I think all the Dodger fans are excited that he's not there anymore.
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. We saw the same thing when Chris Cohen finally sold the Warriors 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
To the Joe Lake of Peter Guber, who's a co-owner of the Dodgers now, that group. So it takes a while for all the, you know, all the institutional architecture, let's say, to work its way out.
There you go.
So, good luck. I mean, listen, baseball is much more fun when you have a rival you really can get it up for and dislike, so.
Yeah, and to have
one day Buster Posey can get into a fist fight with Josh Beckett. I think everybody would be better for it.
or Buster Posey versus Andre Ethier, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. Why not?
Whatever.
Why not? Hey, real quick, because you mentioned the Warriors, are they going to be any good this year?
Oh man, I mean, you tell me how good Steph Curry's ankle and Andrew Bogut's ankles are going to be, and I'll tell you whether or not I think they can make the playoffs. I mean.
Not very good.
I like the depth of... No, so who knows? I mean, this is totally a... Well, at least these guys are a little bit younger than Carl Crawford, who is older than you and I are, Owen. Adrian Gonzalez, who is older than you and I are.
No, it's Gonzo's our age, man. Gonzo's our age, man.
Gonzo's our age?
Yeah.
No, I mean, he might be... No. He's a year older than us.
He's 31. I'm 31.
I thought he's 32.
Okay. I don't have the computer in front of me.
I'm trying to get out.
Yeah.
I know you. But, I think the Warriors have real good depth. I know that I've read a lot of things that said Clay Thompson was really high on Sam Presti's list of guys to get when they decided that they wanted to move James Harden. So, you know, he's going to be starting. I think Harrison Barnes, he's been looking good from what I've read in the preseason. So, you know, if you can get those two studs back.
Yeah.
You kind of have to make it a team that I think can at least win maybe flirt with 40 games this year and a 8th spot in the playoffs.
There you go.
So, you know, it took them a while to at least get beyond that 32-win Eric Musselman, you know, mindset that we've been dealing with since I was a freshman in college. That's right, my freshman year, when Antoine Jameson and Dave Callis led the Warriors to all of 2 wins in the second half of the 2001 season.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm actually a big Eric Musselman fan. I incidentally wrote an article that I think is going to be coming out today or tomorrow about the Lakers and their kind of outlook for this year. And what I wrote was that the fact that they signed a bunch of old guys, it really reminds me of that, you know, Karl Malone, Gary Payton year. And I feel like a lot of things are going to happen. I guess a lot of things have to go right for every championship team to win. But for this team, the ability to, you know, stay healthy throughout the year. You know, three out of the four, the big four for the Lakers now, are either really old or injured or both. And so I just think during an 82-game season. I don't know.
Write down that list for me right now. If you're big four or old or injured, and I'll tell you what's going on.
Steve Nash.
He's old.
And he has to lay down on his stomach at, you know, throughout the last couple of years when he plays like, you know, 25-30 minutes a game only. So, yeah, old.
Not good.
Let's go Kobe Bryant.
Old. Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And injured.
Isn't he?
Oh yeah. He's got a foot injury, man, and a foot injury for
foot
a guard
injury,
is not a good thing, and probably won't play in the opener, it's looking like. Nobody's too optimistic about it right now. So Kobe's old and injured. What about Dwight Howard?
He's hurt. Oh, he's really injured.
Yeah, his back is jacked up, and I don't know if he's going to be, you know, he'll miss at least 20 games. You know, if all goes well, Dwight Howard's going to miss 20 games. If all goes well, Steve Nash is only going to play, you know, 65 or 70 games and you know, play under 30
minutes
a game.
Yeah.
What's that?
And, you know, Steve's going to play maybe 25 minutes a game in an ideal situation. So.
Yeah, and if he plays more, then it's not going to be good at the end. Pau Gasol's going to be the guy who's going to be playing, you know, 38, 40 minutes. They talk about him being the beneficiary. I think when Steve Nash isn't on the floor, he's going to really hurt because the bench really sucks for the Lakers this year. They got Antoine Jameson and Jody Meeks coming off the bench. I'm telling you, they might have, I've heard people talk about, they might have the worst defensive team when Jameson comes in, between Kobe, yeah. Kobe, Nash, and Jameson all on the court at once.
Yeah.
Ron Artest might have to guard four guys, you know, three guys, and Dwight Howard, too, at that point.
Is Ron going to keep his weight in check this year? Because I think he still has a little bit left in the tank if he does that.
Yeah, they said he's in shape, and I think he's really the X factor.
If,
you know, those guys are going to miss games. You know, those guys that I mentioned are going to miss games, and Artest is going to be the guy that's going to have to pick it up both on the offensive and defensive end. So that's
and
a quick.
Let me see if there's one guy you want to rest your entire championship hope on in a very rapidly closing window for Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash, I think it will be Ron Artest and his mental fortitude. So,
you know, we're still calling him Ron Artest, Matt. It's Meta World Peace.
It's Meta World Peace. I will always call him Ron Artest, just as I always will call Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Luau Cinder. So, I view those two the same way. So,
wow.
Yeah, take that.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope that they can be someone.
Meta World
more.
Peace. Yeah. What is that? A guy who incited probably one of the greatest incidents of sports violence in the history of American sports is calling himself Meta World Peace. Wait, the guy who James Harden in the playoffs 2 years ago? Meta World Peace?
You got it, baby.
Oh, my God.
Don't sleep.
This is insane.
Don't sleep on Meta.
Jesus
All right.
Christ.
Well, listen, Matt, congratulations on the Giants win. I got to run. So congratulations. The Giants are the world champions. And
thank you.
Maybe we'll see the championship trophy in San Luis Obispo again, which would be a travesty, but it is what it is. And, you know.
They'll make it down there. If I know Larry there, he'll have that thing down in San Luis County in no time. All right. I'll even down to Santa Barbara.
trying to poach as much of the northern L.A. market as possible?
Absolutely. He's got Artie Moreno on the pincher move, and he's doing the north. So
there you go. There you go. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll have you on the podcast more as this basketball season goes on.
All right, man. If you need to go to the California correspondent, let me know.
All right, we'll do. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com. Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue.